It's KCUR's Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison. Last week was, by just about any measure, not a good week for police, for race relations, or for the peace and harmony of communities in America. Kansas City was spared the headline-grabbing violence of many places, but that doesn't mean the issues and the fears and emotions haven't resonated here in the metro. Today on the program, we're digging into local reaction, asking what people are hearing and saying and doing in response to Dallas and Baton Rouge and St. Paul and more. Joining us around the table to start are Diane Burkholder. She's co-founder of One Struggle KC. Diane, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And also Rabbi Doug Alpert. Doug is part of the Metropolitan Organization for Racial and Economic Equality, or More Squared. He's co-chair of their Criminal Justice Task Force. Doug, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brian. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Tell me, what were some of your first reactions in response to the news of last week?
For me, and I think many people that I know will dig deeper into this, is that Black folks in this country are mourning and are in pain and are angry and aren't feeling heard. And a lot of people, myself included, were numb, particularly after the shootings in Baton Rouge and the Twin Cities. And just when you think you haven't been hit hard enough, it happens again. And just when you want to get up, you can't get up again. And so for me, it was really trying to honor the space that I needed to have to just kind of sit still and take care of my pain in order for me to help fellow folks here in Kansas City.
Obviously, there have been a lot of these stories week after week, month after month. Does the response change over time for you? Does it get worse, or do you get numb to it? How do you respond differently as these numbers seem to climb?
I think for myself and a lot of people, it's figuring out how much to engage, in social media, how much to engage with local news outlets, but then also taking the time to take care of ourselves. Because so many times, like I said, we are numb. I think the response, unfortunately, is it happened again. We know it's going to happen again. The police have killed 500 and about 70 people just this year alone. This is not something that's not going away. So it's something that is troubling, and it's unfortunate that we have to get used to it. And so we're organizing to make sure there's a stop to this.
Does it feel like a far away problem? We hear about it in lots of places. Does it feel like it's a local and real issue for you as someone who lives and works here in Kansas City?
I don't think it necessarily feels far away, because I think if we have that attitude, we're going to be very pessimistic and act like change isn't going to come. There have been changes, particularly even just seeing the narrative here in Kansas City since we've been up and running the last year and a half. Many, many more folks that were kind of on the fence of, I don't know how I feel about this, or you know, I don't have a space to express my anger, are really coming together and saying enough is enough, and really knowing that we have power that we've always known that we've had.
I'll also ask you, Doug Alpert, you're part of a group that brings together not only clergy, but others in different roles throughout the community to respond to this. Maybe just say a quick word for us. What is More Squared, and how are they involved in these conversations?
Well, it pretty much is what it says it is. It's an organization committed to issues of racial and economic, I guess, inequality, and addressing those issues of inequality, and including in this case in the criminal justice system, that there is gross inequality.
And as let me ask you the same question I asked Diane to start off with. What was your reaction as you heard the news out of Baton Rouge and then St. Paul and then Dallas last week?
I would say remarkably similar, numb. After Baton Rouge and St. Paul, I kind of shut down for the week, to be honest with you. I maybe got a couple of calls about it. I didn't respond. I didn't get on social media. I wasn't really even interested in reading what people had to say at that point. I just had to kind of process it all. You know, look, coupled with Black Lives Matter, for me, from a theological standpoint, there's this Jewish tenet of pikuach nefesh, of sanctity of human life. And so every single life matters, and every single life lost matters. And that's what brings me to the table. And so about the only thing I could do in response last week is to kind of catch my breath and redouble on the work that we at Moore Squared have been doing in this area.
And I have the impression, and tell me if this is a wrong impression, that perhaps people are not as fired up here in the Kansas City metro as in some other places, even other places around the country that have not been the site of shootings or of police actions. Am I just not paying close enough attention, or do you think there is a difference and there's a reason for that?
You know, what I see on TV, I kind of dismiss a little bit. I take it with a bit of a grain of salt to really comprehend how fired up any other community is or is not. Mm-hmm. The community in which Moore Squared works is plenty fired up.
Mm-hmm.
And has been for quite some time.
Well, I want to talk about that as our conversation continues today. We're also joined this morning by Alvin Brooks, who is one of the founders and was the former president and CEO of the Ad Hoc Group Against Crime. A member currently of the Kansas City Board of Police Commissioners. Mr. Brooks, thank you so much for being here.
Good being here with you. Thank you.
So, Alvin, what was your reaction to the news last week of the shootings of two more African Americans by police?
Well, I think it was certainly touch the heartstring of persons of goodwill, wherever they are and whomever they might be, and whether their faith or their gender or their status in life, their color, or whatever the case might be. And it ought to affect all of us. I mean, it's not a black thing. It's just a American phenomenon. It's a human phenomenon. It's a black thing in terms of who the victims are and what causes that. It didn't start just in Baton Rouge or in Minnesota or in Dallas. It's an ongoing kind of systemic thing, and unless we address it from that vantage point, we will never get to the core. It's good to talk about over the dinner table, the breakfast table, over the air, but what are we going to do about it? And how important is human life? I think the Black Lives Matters movement is another form of the civil rights movement. And how was the civil rights movement rejected? It was anti-American. It was all those kind of things with those who, first of all, didn't want equal opportunity and human rights for people of color. And so I think what we're seeing is a manifestation of those long years of disenfranchisement, mm-hmm. of not accepting, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men and women, paraphrased, are created equal and endowed with their creative certainty, all the rights among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, what does that mean in 1776 as opposed to 2016? Does it not mean the same when those so-called founding fathers put all that together? They did not include their slaves. All except the Adamses were slaveholders, even in the Constitution 11 years later, mm-hmm. to form a more perfect union in Philadelphia. Maybe that's why the Liberty Bell cracked, because it was a good start, but it was not inclusive. So what I'm saying, long story short, is that there comes a time when you have to look in the mirror and see who you really are and how you feel and how you relate to humanity. It seems to me that's what it's all about.
Yeah, Alvin, you have been a longtime leader in the African American community in Kansas City by any measure.
Well, I don't consider myself being a leader. I'm just one of the troops. I appreciate the title and all that. But thank you. But I'm just someone who's God's allowed to be on planet Earth for 84 years, and I'm thankful for that.
And I appreciate that, and appreciate the humility of that
yes,
as well.
Sure.
But you know, there's another aspect of your leadership too. You're a former police officer, and you serve on the Board of Police Commissioners. I think that puts you in a pretty unique position to address some of these questions. Tell me about your reaction to what happened on Friday morning in Dallas with the shooting of the police officers.
Devastating.
There.
I mean, it. I was not in the city at the time, but when I heard about it, it touched the very being, and I hope that's the way it touched Americans in general, the world in general. Apparently, we've got someone who mention a number of them names, including Black Lives Matter and all that, who what I believe what that person did was not on behalf of that. From all indications, there is someone, again, with mental health issues in our community, able to get guns in our community. And unless we deal with those issues of mental health and deal with those issues of guns, I think we'll continue to have people who are demented, people who are on that fringe for whatever these things are going to happen. But certainly, I along with millions, I'm sure, say to the families of these police officers that certainly we're suffering this with you. I know the 10 years I was in the department, my family always, when I decided to go on, my dad said some different things about, first of all, why did you want to get involved in that mess? That's because of how we were treated by police officers in Kansas City. But then when I decided to go, he also said this. He said, I'd much rather try to pay for a lawyer than to pay for your funeral, which meant that he intended for me to come home, and my wife and my kids intended me to come home in the evening. I think that that's the kind of thing that here, and it's, I think it's not, it's interesting that the officers who died in the line of duty were there to protect the persons who were marching, who were certainly exercising their right as Americans to march, to protecting. So that shot should not be that should be a part of the mix. That has to be there. I mean, you know, you put their life on the line. And we can say we want to say about police departments. I'm a product of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. And that was, I left in 64, so that's what, 36 and 16, was that 52 years, whatever.
A while back,
years,
yes.
A while back.
I appreciate that. I want to invite listeners to join our conversation, too. Do you feel like the events of the past week in Dallas, in Baton Rouge, in St. Paul affect our community here in Kansas City? How have you been touched by those events? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We'll also be checking Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Let us know your thoughts about these events, your questions for our guests, which include Alvin Brooks, as you just heard, Rabbi Doug Alpert, and also Diane Burkholder of One Struggle KC. Diane, what is One Struggle KC for listeners who may not know?
Yeah, thank you. So One Struggle KC was founded in October 2014 after the instance of Mike Brown being killed in Ferguson. And so there was a weekend of resistance that took place in Ferguson, and myself and several people had gone. And so we came back, and total of five of us decided we needed to do something here in Kansas City, particularly talking about centering Black folks. We also have a sister organization that stemmed out of that, Una Lucha, that works with the Latino community and really talking about Black-Brown unity. And we really wanted to talk about that, you know, not only solidarity for St. Louis, but St. Louis is not an anomaly. St. Louis, unfortunately, is the norm. The norm that plays out here in Kansas City, particularly with the ways in which our police have killed people here in this city. As of January, there were 47 people that were killed by the police department
over
10 years, okay. The last 10 years with absolutely no indictments. And so we've been working with some of the families that have been victimized. And I think oftentimes we think that, like, oh, we have a Black police chief and we have a Black mayor and everything's fine. And we have to talk about these are systems. It's not about people. It's about systems itself. And so we were talking about state-sponsored violence, how it affects us not only regarding police brutality, but how Black and Brown folks are criminalized before they even do anything.
So what does that kind of organizing look like here? I mean, how do you get people together, and you're getting them together to kind of do what?
Yeah, so when we first started, we were very much just trying to find space for folks. And so we did a lot of direct actions around town, around the plaza. We did one on the 70 highway.
Direct actions meaning protests.
Protests, civil disobedience. Really, people just wanted a space to come together and voice their concerns. And so we did many protests. But we also talk about, like, you know, protest is one tool. And so we're also talking about that we need spaces to heal and to grieve together and talk about how we come together. And so we've done art and healing events to really bring us together, to have a space to mourn, but then also to celebrate Black joy and Black creativity. And so we've done a lot of trying to talk about that it's not just about the police buy-ins that we're having, but how do we sustain ourselves as a community to get through this?
We are joined now by Damon Daniel. He's the current executive director of the Ad Hoc Group Against Crime, a group that Alvin Brooks, one of our other guests, helped to form many years ago. Damon is now leading that group. Thank you so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure to be here. Greetings.
Greetings to you. Obviously, your group has a long history of addressing relationships between the community and government and police. Can you talk a little bit about how you've seen that develop in the past few months and especially in the past week?
Well, you know, I'm really kind of proud of how the leadership in the Kansas City area has really address this issue, though there's still a long way to go. One thing that, you know, I really commend them on, when I say them, I'm talking about the Kansas City Police Department, even the FBI and the U.S. Attorney and the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office. I don't know if the listeners are aware that back in December, those agencies made an announcement of a memorandum of understanding that's sort of designed to ensure that there's a cooperation among KCPD, the FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the Prosecutor's Office to outline sort of a uniform procedure in handling investigations, whether it's potential civil rights violations by police and or even officer-involved shootings. It's an unprecedented MOU that's unique to Kansas City, and I think something that could be replicated across the country when you think about incidents that we've, like the ones that have happened in the recent week or so.
And Damon, do you feel like those efforts have borne fruit, or do you feel like they're, in spite of all that, you still have all these tensions, you still have all these unanswered questions?
Well, I think it's a proactive approach, certainly, but there's always going to be this tension because these wounds, as relates to the racial tension and the relationship between law enforcement and communities of color, those wounds have never been healed. And so there's always going to be that tension until we take time to address it. I think that, you know, in speaking with Chief Forte and learning more about some of the things that they've done proactively as it relates to the training for de-escalation has been good. But in Missouri, you know, there hasn't been much of a progression in terms of making sure that, you know, post police academy, that law enforcement officers continue to go through training and that it's streamlined and required, particularly as it relates to implicit bias, as it relates to de-escalation. These things need to be uniform. They need to be required across the board. And right now in the state of Missouri, it's not. And so that's something that we, as community members, as registered voters, need to be expressing to our leadership.
Doug, you represent a group of people who are, though not people of color, are engaging with these issues in very intentional ways.
Well, actually, they are.
I
just happen not to be one, but
thank
they
you.
Are.
Good. Thank you for clarifying that. I didn't mean there are no people of color involved in your organization, but there are a lot of people who are who are white who are engaging these issues in pretty intentional ways. What do you think is important? Why are you involved in them?
Well, I mean, for myself, because it's the right thing to do. It's pursuing justice is the right thing to do. So I can only speak for myself, and I guess that's, you know, and honoring the sanctity of human life, as I said earlier, that's my own personal agenda. I will say that, you know, whatever steps have been taken in the short term in the last few months, there's a long, long way to go. And on the state level, there was a woeful lack of response post-Ferguson, where everybody had hoped that legislation would happen, bills would be passed to see greater transparency in the process when there is a police-involved shooting. And by the way, people should know the number 47, that's of police-involved shootings, that's a disproportionately high number of police-involved shootings for a city of Kansas City size. So in the abstract, 47 in a decade may not seem like much, but it's actually a whole lot. And for Moore Squared, we're focused, amongst other things, we're focused on a lot of things, but we're focused on this dire need for one, and Damon touched on it, not just initial police training, but that there is a culture that exists within the department. So if a new officer gets training, doesn't do any good if the veteran officers aren't retrained and the culture changes. And then after the fact, after there is a police-involved shooting, that there actually is a transparent, accountable citizens review panel that can engender a sense of trust in the process versus right now where, particularly when the Ferguson case, it was an awful result and only engendered more distrust.
And Doug, you mentioned state legislation that folks would have liked to see after Ferguson that didn't happen. Are there local things that, in terms of either legislation or regulations or police directives to the department that you think would bring about positive change that could be accomplished right now?
Well, I just mentioned the two. The one is pre-incident to have better, more training, a wholesale change of culture, and then post-shootings, a citizens review panel, I think an outside prosecutor is also needed. It's an impossible position for a local prosecutor to be in if they have to try these cases and then go out and work with the police department on other cases as well.
Let's take. Did you want to jump in, Diane?
I did. I think it's really important to talk about. You know, KCPD has done these recent collaborations with the FBI, right? And I think we need to kind of scale it back a little bit, is that there is gross mistrust within the community. And so when law enforcement is collaborating with other law enforcement, like Rabbi Alpert talked about, we're talking about independent citizen review boards to actually look at this. So a lot of people in this community do not trust that collaboration. We're talking about, you know, Ryan Stokes' campaign. He was killed July in 2013, and we have asked and pressured, particularly prosecutor and mayor to reopen the case, and there has been absolutely nothing. There has been silence. Javon Hawkins, who was killed last year, he actually died 1 year ago yesterday. When we asked about what was going on initially after he was killed on Twitter, Forte's reaction was, "I'm sorry for the delay. I've been dealing with a sick hamster." So it shows the absolute callousness and arrogance that our police think that they are above and beyond. And we're talking about, we just, not even about a conviction, about an indictment and the way that people are silenced. And so when we hear about collaborations of police and police, we're like, no, this sounds like it's something to make us just be passive and be like, everything's going to be okay. It needs to be independent. It needs to be really driven from the community.
I want to mention that we did try to get representatives of the Kansas City Police Department on today on the short notice. They weren't able to do that, but we will be speaking with someone from the Kansas City Fraternal Order of Police in the second half of our program. Brooks?
Let me comment. First of all, the Board of Police Commissioners are not police officers. I happen to be kind of a hybrid, kind of unique. I don't know of any in the history of the Board of Police Commissioners I've ever had one who was a former police officer on the board. But the thing of it is, we're citizens. We're appointed by the governor based on the statute. We're citizens. That's a citizen review board. I mean, and we don't always agree, and we are the policymakers of the board by statute. And so I think that any other group would have to be statutorily so identified to do that. And I mean, that's something that the General Assembly of the state of Missouri would have to pass, because we don't have the power to pass our power on to another group. We don't have that power. So that's the citizen review as far as the Kansas Missouri Police Department mm-hmm. is concerned. Another thing is that Chief Forte has now been in office 5 years, I think, in October. And a vast difference in terms of what the police department was prior to that and what it is now. And if either my colleagues here, the persons here, or anyone would attend the board meetings to hear the chief, what he's talking about, the same things we're talking about here in terms of what's happening in the police department, how the culture's got to change. You don't change it overnight. We didn't get this way overnight, and you're not going to change it overnight. But what we also must remember, that the police department is reflective of the community in which it serves. I mean, they're not in a vacuum. I mean, it's reflective of America. It's a microcosm of what America's all about. Mm-hmm. So why shouldn't we think that there are people in police department that have racial issues, that have issues in reference to one's gender, in reference to one's faith? And so, but I think training is because that has to take place within the police department, and it's taking place, and it's not only in terms of those who come to the academy, but also going back into the training. So it's not in a vacuum. So I want to point that out, and all due respect to the comments about a review board outside of the police department. It can't happen under the structure we have in Kansas City, Missouri.
Appreciate that. I wanted to get some of our calls. We have a full board of calls. We also need to take a break, but let's take a call before we do that. Mike in Prairie Village, thank you for calling in.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Doing great, thanks.
Thank you.
That's good. You know, I live in Prairie Village. I'm a brother, probably one of just a very few black man in Prairie Village. I've been pulled over before. I got pulled over because my license plate light was out. And as I expressed to the officer, I'm like, man, I didn't even know I had a license plate light. I was a little contentious because, you know, I asked him, I'm like, there are homicides that are unsolved in the city, and we're getting pulled over for license plate light. It doesn't feel like protection. It feels more like a harassment. And, you know, for something like that, with the technology that the police department has, you know, can't they just take a picture of your license plate, send you a bill for the fine or what have you? But, you know, and like I told the officer, too, I did not want to take my hands off the steering wheel. I'm like, I got my license, insurance, all that. But I'm like, man, I'm scared to take my hands off the steering wheel because I know. And I know police officers. I know black cops. I know white cops. And, you know, the racial tension, even amongst the police department, is bad. And one of the things that really gets me about, you know, all law enforcement is that where's the education? The people who are charged with enforcing the law wear guns and don't have a clue about the average citizen's constitutional right. You know, how about before you issue a gun, you make them get certified or have a degree in constitutional law?
Mike,
so they'll know.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I think we've heard you, and I think that's an important voice, and we'll continue to talk about that in the second half of our program today. In fact, after the break, we're going to hear a study out of KU that examined police traffic stops around the country and did show significant disparities based on the race of the driver. So stick around for that. I want to thank Rabbi Doug Alpert for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And we'll have the rest of our guests continue with us in the second half. We'll also welcome a local representative of the Fraternal Order of Police and continue this conversation. So stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. We have a full table of guests and also of callers, but joining the conversation now is Chuck Epp. He's a university distinguished professor at KU, the author with others of Pulled Over, How Police Stops Define Race and Citizenship. Chuck, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be with you.
You may have heard a caller with us just before the break saying he got pulled over for his license plate light being out. I know in your study you find that minor infractions like that are not an uncommon reason for people of color to be pulled over.
That's exactly right. We surveyed drivers in the Kansas City metro area asking about their experiences in police stops, and the essential observation that we discovered in that was that drivers experience two rather different kinds of police stops. One type is a traffic safety stop for speeding, like something like 10 or 15 over, where a ticket is given. The other is precisely the kind of stop that the gentleman caller referred to just before the break for a minor violation. And typically in those stops, officers then proceed to ask questions and look around the vehicle and so forth. That second type of stop we call an investigatory stop. It is done to check out the driver because the driver has seemed to the officer to be suspicious in some sort of way. And it's made to begin or possibly begin a criminal investigation of the driver. And a classic example of that is a stop for a burned out license plate light like that driver experienced. And like that caller observed, many drivers who experience this sort of stop are a bit indignant, or all the way over to feel violated by the experience by the end. So his comments were quite typical of the sorts of experiences reported to us in that study.
And, of course, one of the cases last week, the case of Philando Castile, pulled over for a broken taillight, leading a few steps down the road to his death. Have you done research into how those situations escalate from that point of being pulled over to being to becoming violent?
Our study speaks to that precise question. We found that, as I mentioned, drivers are often a bit indignant about being stopped for such a minor violation and then being subjected to what is really often an invasive series of questions and probes. Officers approach a vehicle when they've made an investigatory stop in anticipation of some degree of indignation. They anticipate the possibility of escalation, to put it another way. It turns out we also found that most drivers who experience this kind of stop, and I should say, I didn't mention earlier, African-Americans are much more likely to experience this second kind of stop than are whites. In fact, nearly three times as likely to be subjected to this kind of stop as whites. African-Americans are commonly, they've heard stories about this kind of stop. They've often experienced it themselves, we found in our study, and also anticipate the possibility of escalation in this stop. But what is striking, we found that both sides, both the officer and the driver, typically work pretty hard to avoid that escalation. And you've seen echoes of this in much of the public commentary over the past several days. Black drivers will say, I kept my hands on the wheel. I made sure I made no sudden movements. They are trying to head off the possibility of escalation. But we also found that, you know, when this sort of stop is done again and again and again, and you might say hundreds of thousands of times across a country the size of ours, in some instances, something will happen where an escalation will occur, often unintentionally. And those are the ones that lead to tragedy, as in the case of the shooting of Philando Castile. Could I add,
Chuck,
there that
very quickly, Chuck, if you would.
Yeah, is consistent with a number of other police shootings in the past several years, shooting of Walter Scott in North Charleston, South Carolina, precisely that pattern. The shooting of Samuel DuBose in Cincinnati, precisely that pattern. The arrest of Sandra Bland in Texas arose out of such a stop.
Chuck, I really appreciate your bringing the research to these questions. Thanks so much.
You bet. Happy to help.
That's Chuck Epp, one of the authors of a study that looked into the disparity of people being pulled over around the country. I want to just ask Damon Daniel, who's still with us on the line from the Ad Hoc Group Against Crime. Damon, when you hear those numbers, what comes to mind for you?
My own personal experience. When the caller called earlier, I started thinking about the last time I was actually pulled over by a police officer. For a similar situation, I was driving my wife's car, and she's had this vehicle for the last 3-4 years, and there's a slight tint over the license plate, and that was the reason why the officer pulled me over. Was he claimed that my license plate wasn't fully visible. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, totally understand that the caller's sentiments as well as what is rooted in this. The research that my colleague presented as well. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, we have on the line with us, I'm sorry to cut you off, Damon, we have a lot of folks to be resources today, but I want to invite Brad Lemon into the conversation because we've been talking a lot about police conduct, and want to invite him to respond to some of that. Brad is the president and the department liaison with the Kansas City, Missouri Fraternal Order of Police, and on short notice has agreed to join us today. Brad, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Some of the comments we've heard, including that study, I know you were able to hear that conversation, is that there's a disparity in how people of color are treated by police, maybe pulled over more frequently or for lesser infractions. I know you're not speaking for any police department, but for the union, what how do you respond to that?
Well, first, I wasn't actually, I didn't know that's what I was going to be speaking about today. I thought it was over police, the issues, how we were dealing with the shootings from...
We are definitely wanting to talk about that for sure.
I can address that. I'll tell you, I can't address how people feel when they get pulled over. I can tell you that I was just recently written a ticket in Wyoming for speeding a couple days ago, 77 miles an hour in a 70 in an area where it wasn't a single person within 30 miles. And it's no different. Everybody feels a little, you know, like they didn't deserve it, or maybe they couldn't have been written a ticket, or they shouldn't have been stopped. But, you know, I was on my motorcycle, and when I got pulled over, I told the highway patrolman that my gun and my wallet were in the same bag. And I allowed him, actually asked him to take it out, because reality is we're in a different world, and things happen. And rather than him take my word for that I'm a police officer and all that, I just chose to let him take my – it's just – I did not want to reach into a bag where there was a gun sitting there. For any other reason, other than the fact that I don't want to put – nobody wants to put themselves in a position to get hurt. Now, at the end of the day, I complied. That's the issue. I complied. My wife, her license plates were expired by and I had taken and gotten a sticker and just left it in my car and forgot to put it on the car. And she was stopped 4 or 5 times in Johnson County the same day, but thank God I'd taken a picture of the sticker and sent it to her so she didn't get written – she didn't get tickets. But the fact is, she got stopped. We're talking about a white female.
Yeah.
So some of it's perception, some of it's reality. The ones that are reality, we have a place out there, you know, that you can file complaints when police officers act inappropriate, and we investigate those. You know, we talk about some of these crimes, you know, some of these minor traffic offenses that turn into shooting situations like this, or the issue out in South Carolina. That was a minor infraction, and it turned into a police shooting. However, there were some other things that occurred. There was an individual who ran from the car, resisted arrest, and then the police officer, from all apparent, you know, from what we look like, may probably use excessive force after that. But there was more than just a minor traffic violation. There were other issues. I think we keep forgetting about the personal responsibility of the individuals being pulled over. So,
and Brad, I want to give our other guests a chance to respond too. But let me just ask you, since you are correct, we did ask you to talk about what happened in Dallas as well, and I want to make sure you have a chance to do that. I know that when there are shootings of police officers in another city, it affects police officers all over the country. What has been the impact? What have you been hearing from your fellow officers here in Kansas City?
Well, you know, I think. Looking around, you see a lot of stuff on social media that people that aren't cops have been saying, I wouldn't go to work, I would take time off, I'd call in sick. And, you know, reality was every single police officer I know got up the next day, put her pants on, went to work, and did exactly what we're sworn an oath to do. You know, we choose to do this job because we love it, not because it's all that we can do. And the men and women that protect this city and cities just like ours across the country, you know, this is a calling for us, and regardless of how we feel, they're still doing their jobs. Now, how do we, you know, we're just a couple days away from that event. Officers are, you know, they're hurting. I mean, it's a situation where the two incidents that kind of drove this issue didn't even happen in Dallas. It had nothing to do with Dallas. Dallas was minding its own business from all accounts. Their chief does an amazing job with the community. However, 5 officers were assassinated, 7 more were injured, a number of other people were shot in the process. That's the scary thing, is that you can think, well, this issue happened in our city, we ought to have a heightened awareness, but now it shows that it doesn't have to happen in your city. You have to be prepared for this kind of incident anywhere in the country. And that's scary, because we're just humans that just want to do a really good job for the people we work for.
Brad, I appreciate that, and thank you for being with us. If you'd stick around just a few minutes, we may have a caller or two who has a question. Yeah. Diane Burkholder is still with us from One Struggle KC, as well as Alvin Brooks, who's, among other things, a member of the Kansas City Board of Police Commissioners. Diane, you've heard this conversation here about interactions between police and citizens, and I've seen you reacting to some of it.
Probably best if people cannot see my facial expressions right now. I think this narrative, particularly that comes from police, is that, you know, if you just act a certain way, that you won't get shot. And we know time and time again, black folks across this country are acting a certain way. They're black, right? That we have to talk about the fact that the police is built and thrives off of systems of white supremacy. The police were founded to run as slave patrols, right? And it is still used to control black people in their communities. It is still used to police our behavior, police our actions that we're just trying to live day to day. And so when I hear about police saying, you know, this is really tough, yes, you're mourning. We get that. We understand. But also, we also understand that, like, the policing is not the most dangerous job. That narrative has been given to us. It is actually not even on the top 10 list of the most dangerous job in the country. And so we're looking at about accountability, and we hear possibly excessive report and possibly this and possibly, you know, we need to be talking about de-escalation. Why are police killing us in split seconds? Why is this happening time and time again? And there's been absolutely no indictments. And so the value system, we are told to uphold to a certain standard that our own police officers aren't even upheld to. There is a complete double standard in this country.
Brad, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that.
You know, I can't, it's really difficult to discuss issues that of people's opinions. That may be her opinion, and she may feel that way. But, you know, I could discuss specific incidents and issues that she believes occurred and that in her position. But at the end of the day, I can't argue somebody's opinion, and really just difficult. All I can tell her is, you know, we support the investigation of, you know, these crimes and these offenses by either us or by anybody else. Due process is due process. We believe everybody should get it. Fundamental fairness is really what should happen. And if an officer of the law does something inappropriate and wrong and criminal, they should be charged.
But they haven't.
And, you know, outside of that, I'm not going to debate how somebody feels.
Yeah, I appreciate, Brad, that there's a difficult question to resolve in such a short amount of time. We've invited callers to be part of the conversation. We haven't gotten to very many of them, which I'm sorry about. Let's take a couple if we can. Let's talk to Al in Riverside. Al, welcome to Up to Date.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'm hearing a lot of people's different reasons of why this happens, why that happens. But I think we as man, as a species, has got to wake up and see the sanctity of life. I don't care if you're brown, white, black, yellow, purple, or green. We have got to learn that the sanctity of life comes before whether, oh, he shot my brother, I'm going to get him, or this or that.
All right.
I
appreciate that, Al. No, I appreciate the sentiment and the emotion behind what you're saying. Thank you for calling today. I appreciate it. Let's talk to Carlos in Shawnee. Carlos, welcome to Up to Date.
Oh, thank you for listening to me. I'm really sorry about all this happened. I'm a physician in Kansas City for 40 years. I treat white, black, Asians, whatever, lots of beautiful people. However, I can see that nobody addresses the real problem that we have seen in America. In 40 years, the divisiveness has increased. And, of course, part of it is because the urban core has been abandoned by whites and also by the black leaders. No big companies come in, no job for the poor people there, no entertainment for the young blacks. Unfortunately, this aggravates the problem. And, of course, of the 4,000 killers that we have in black on black, nobody talks about. And the blacks and the whites should talk about, because we are part of it. We buy the blacks from the guns, and usually it's the whites, and the blacks kill each other for the territory. And who is addressing that? Of the 400 deaths that we have on the police, nobody says how really were really needed because they were being attacked by guns and whatever.
Carlos, I appreciate your calling in and raising those issues. And let me ask you, Alvin, he's raising that there's broader systemic issues that would have to be solved to really get to the heart of some of these
problems.
Well,
you know, I tried to say that when in my opening remarks about certainly systemic. But again, I think that one of the changes that have come about since in the last 5 years with Chief Forte is that it's recognized that there are issues affecting problems within the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. And he's doing everything he can with the support of the board, along with staff and also officers on the street. I mean, the rank and file. Are there those and any, you know, again, I repeat, the police department is reflective of the community in which they serve. And so what you find brought to the police department is what's occurring in the community, and what you have to do through training, through psychological testing, as well as retraining, and with the consciousness on the part of the policymakers, the board, as well as the administration, the office on the street, that that's where the difference has to be made. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but it's certainly a progressive move on the part of the Kansas City Missouri Police Department. That's the only one that I can talk about.
Let's get the last word from each of our guests, and a brief one if possible. Damon Daniel from the Ad Hoc Group Against Crime. Damon?
My last remarks would be that all the listeners out there, to encourage folks to get out and vote. I know that we haven't really touched on, in some ways, how we legislatively can address this issue. But there are ways, and so I would encourage folks to get involved in their local government. Show up to the police board commission meetings. Show up to your city council meetings, and put pressure on our elected officials to do what they can to address this issue. And then lastly, as it relates to relationship between communities of color and law enforcement, we as communities of color should be having a lot more dialogues, particularly as it relates to this issue. But we also need to impress upon each other, particularly as it relates to some of the unsolved homicides that are occurring in our community as well.
I appreciate that, and that might have to be the last word for all of our guests, as we're just about out of time. Brad Lemon from the Fraternal Order of Police, I am most grateful for you being with us. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And also Damon Daniel, who you just heard from the Ad Hoc Group Against Crime. Alvin Brooks, thank you for being here.
My pleasure, always.
And Diane Burkholder from One Struggle KC, thank you.
Thank you.